All right, back at the Pleasant Street Tea Company, I'm with Heather Atwood, as we usually are on, during this week, and we have a very special guest with us. They were sort of both interviewing, and that's Bobby Gibb of Rockport, of the Marathon fame and an artist as well. And Bobby, thank you so much to agreeing to this.
Well, this is a pleasure and a huge surprise, I must say, when I walk in here before my coffee and have an interview.
Yeah, this is a hot spot.
We're going to start being careful before they walk into Pleasant Street Tea, because we might nab them for an interview.
Well, I got to talk to Allie, make sure it's okay to do this, you know?
Yeah, right.
Well, Heather, you introduced me to Bobby, and you're doing an article, I believe, or you will be doing an article upcoming, so tell me a little bit about what's planned.
Well, we had hoped to snag Bobby before the marathon, but she was a very, very busy lady. Of course, she is the first woman to ever cross the marathon finish line, first woman to ever cross that finish line. And last year was your 50th anniversary of that race.
Right.
Yeah, which is just amazing, because she looks like she's like 42, right?
Oh, wow.
So,
And she could probably still outrun us, so, you know.
I think she could. Uh-huh. And we both run, but I'm pretty sure she could outrun us. So, so I know you run in the woods of Rockport also, right?
Yeah.
One of my favorite places to run.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we had hoped to have this story run by the marathon in the other Cape, but it's not going to. That's okay. Bobby and I will ultimately pull an interview together, maybe here.
So MSO scooped you, okay.
Yeah, right.
Bobby, I was watching The X-Files recently, and one of the things that Mulder said to Scully, I don't know if you're familiar with the old show, but he said, and this is a remake, so the show was popular about 20 years ago, and he said something like, well, Scully, back in the day. And she responded by saying, Mulder, this is the day. Do you feel that way?
This is the day.
Yeah. In other words, all the retrospectives and so on, but you're still obviously active. You're an athlete. You're creating now, and all this publicity that's gone on and all that's happened in the last year or so. But this is the day. I mean, stuff is still going on. So what's your emotional feeling about all this stuff?
Right. Well, there is a past, and we all build on the past, but the only place we all really exist is right here in the present moment. And for myself, I've spent many, many years trying to make the world better. And I look out into the world and I see, how are people hurting themselves and how are they hurting each other? And then whatever I can do, in whatever little way I can do it, I try to make the world better. And one of the ways is that I fight against what I see as false beliefs. And I really think there is a reality and there is a truth, and that matters. And
you said false?
False belief.
False beliefs.
And in the case back in the 60s, the 50s, one of the false beliefs was that women couldn't run marathons. But there were many false beliefs around women that had served for really centuries to keep women pretty much confined in a little box. Very few opportunities. It was thought they weren't strong enough to withstand the rigors of medical school. They couldn't be lawyers. They couldn't. And so as I was growing up, I was more and more aware of this little box that I was going to have to fit myself into. And I could see how unhappy it had made my mother, who was a very intelligent, beautiful woman who had a gift for writing. And yet she had to give up all that to be a housewife. And I love men. I wanted to be married. I wanted to have children. But I also had a mind and a body, and I wanted to develop my gifts. And I wanted to see a world where women could join with men, and not in this war between the sexes, but in a sense that we had fit ourselves in such stereotypes, fit ourselves and each other. And women themselves were doing this to themselves, and men themselves, like men aren't supposed to cry, they're supposed to be strong, they're not supposed to have erosion. Men weren't allowed in the delivery room, and this was all women's work. And women, on the other hand, weren't supposed to have brains and weren't supposed to be strong. And I thought, wow, you know what? We live in a democracy, and each individual person is different, and each individual person has gifts and a sets of gifts, and I believe something they came here to give the world. And so I kind of wanted to break through all those stereotypes and open things up so every individual could be themselves.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you could have started your quest in many different ways, but running was, I don't know, the apex for you? Running was the vehicle to accomplish something important at that time?
Well, I always loved running, even as a little girl. I mean, as a 2 or 3 year old, I would run off across the field, and it just made me feel alive. And I think from the moment I was born, I was really amazed at existence. My mother said I used to arch my back and look up over the side of the crib. I mean, a day mm-hmm. after I was born, I remember that feeling like, wow, this all exists. Wow, I'm alive. What is this? And as I grew, I loved to learn things. My father was a scientist. And so I'd ask, why is the sky blue? Why does the moon go through phases? Why this, why that? And so I grew up really interested in science. I wanted to understand things, not just science, but also sociology and history and everything. I just had this voracious appetite to understand things. I loved school, and I loved going to school. I loved learning things, and I studied science and so forth. So I also loved art. I mean, from a very early age, I was painting. I used to love horses, so I'd paint mm-hmm. endless pictures of horses and stuff. So it was sort of multi. It was just a sense of, wow, being alive on this earth. And the more I learned, the more amazed I was. I mean, I would study science. I learned about atoms and molecules. And then I'd look up at night, and my dad made a telescope, and we look up at the stars. And I said, wow, this is amazing. How did all this get here? He gave me a microscope. And we go up and get pond water and look at little amoebas. I'm like, wow, this is amazing. They're moving around all by themselves. And it's all doing this thing all by itself. It was here. I mean, we're born into this amazing, miraculous existence. And even ourselves, I mean, we evolved out of this, and we didn't create ourselves, and we find ourselves with hearts and lungs and, you know, alive here on this earth. And it, to me, it was just an incredible miracle. I didn't see any split between science and spirituality mm-hmm. at all. I mean, for me, learning about science was a spiritual experience. It increased my appreciation of nature and of existence. So when I ran, I felt this sense of the life of the universe flowing through me. I felt so alive. It was just something I loved to do. And when everyone else settled down and stopped running, along around at the end, maybe at the end of high school, mm-hmm. it was not proper for a grown woman to run in public in those days. And God forbid that she should sweat, or I should say perspire. And so, you know, I was way outside the social norm, but I would run with the neighborhood dogs up in the woods. I lived in Winchester at that time. Came up here for the summers because both sets of grandparents lived here. And I would run in the fells, and I would run around Rockport, and I'd run in nature, and I just love nature. And so that's why I ran. And I didn't have any connection with sports. Mm-hmm. I mean, I liked horseback riding and all that, but the running was something else. It was more of a spiritual connection to life.
You hit a buzzer because Heather and I both talked about that in running. I'm not a competitive runner, and there's three things I would never do: jump out of an airplane, do a bungee jump, or run a marathon. But the spiritual aspect of running, and Heather's shaking her head, is something we've talked about, because when I'm out there, the mind, I pray, I meditate, and the body comes along for the ride.
Right, exactly. It integrates your mind, your body, your spirit. And because we're all one thing, we're a unified thing. In nature, in us, we're not separated into a mind and a body. Our mind is part of our body, and our body is integrated with our mind.
Let me ask you about the running, though. How did you come up with the goal of running the Boston Marathon, or any marathon for that matter? How'd you get into that?
Well, I first heard of the Boston Marathon. A high school friend, father told me about it. And I couldn't believe that people could run 26 miles. So my dad and
I still can't.
I know. My dad and I went out in 1964, and we saw the marathon. And I just fell in love with it. I totally fell in love with it, and some inner thing said, you're going to run that marathon. These are your people. And so I just, it was totally irrational. It was an inner decision. And I look back and I say, how did I dare to follow what I loved in the face of all the social opposition of the day? But I did, for some reason, this young girl. And I followed that, and I started to train the next day, and I had no idea. I wore nurse's shoes. There were no running shoes mm-hmm. for women, nothing. There was no books. I had no coach. And I just started running further and further distances. And then that summer, and I was in love with this country. I love this country, the whole the idea of a democracy, the idea of a country in which the people control the government through which they govern themselves. I thought, this is a new evolution of political thought. This is the future. We have to do this because the alternatives are too grim, too awful. And we've seen history tear itself apart. And I thought, the United States, for all it's done wrong, after World War II, the first time in history, it for foe and friend alike, it rebuilt them. It didn't take slaves. It didn't take women. It didn't take booty. It didn't take territory. It just, and I said, this is the way we have to move forward. And then the UN, I think, wow, this is a new evolution of political thought, a new way of solving conflicts. So I was into this sort of evolutionary way of thinking, looking at the world, seeing the way human beings are destroying each other and destroying themselves, and thinking, we have to move forward. So I saw this race, and I thought, wow, I'm going to run this. And I wasn't thinking men or women right. at all. Never crossed my mind. I trained for 2 years, but I was saying, I love this country, so I went across in a Volkswagen bus with my Malamute puppy, and at night, I slept out under the stars. Again, unheard of for a woman. I was in my early 20s to sleep out unprotected, you know, and people said, well, didn't you have a gun? No, I didn't have a gun. I mean, for heaven's sakes, you know, I slept out. And as I went across the country, I became more and more immersed in this incredible universe. And I began to see, wow, I'm on this universe. I'm in this universe, on this earth. And I got to Nevada. And I saw more stars than I had ever seen in my life. I mean, more stars than dark places. I said, wow, why is this here? Why? Nobody knows. I mean, people make up their little myths and they have their stories. But nobody knows why it's here or how it got here. This is a mystery beyond total belief. And I had the feeling that it was emerging out of this sense of incomprehensible love that only something is as strong as this incomprehensible love could be creating this whole thing. And beyond all religions, just the immediate fact of existence, face to face, and that's what I was looking for. And so this running across the country was kind of a spiritual quest for the fundamental existence, that fundamental being that we all participate in. So,
You trained on that drive also. Yeah. That's a really interesting thing, right? Yeah. You would go to a certain point and then run back to your bus? I wasn't quite sure, right?
So, I mean, not only did I sleep out at night, and so I got this incredible universal feeling, but every day in a different place, I'd park the bus, and then I'd go off running, whether it was West Virginia, I'd go up and down the hills, across Ohio, across the Mississippi, out onto the plains. I had never seen the Great Plains. It just blew my mind, miles and miles of waving grass and wheat. And I would eat breakfast in truck stops, and so I would talk with all the local people all the way along the way and get to know the flavor of the country, and out across the Rocky Mountains and running up the Rocky Mountains and down the other side, over the Sierras, and then down finally to California, San Francisco, and then the beach, Stinson Beach, running up and down the beach, and then I plunged into the Pacific Ocean. It took me about 40 days, and it was just an incredible. So that was the basis of my training. By the time I got to the Rocky Mountains, I was running about 15, 20 miles at a stretch. And then I came back. I had to go to school. I was at Tufts University, and I was studying physics and biology and art. I would go to the Museum of Fine
Great
Art.
Great mix, physics, biology,
right.
and art.
Yeah,
I love
well, sculpture.
I
went
love
to the.
It.
They're affiliated with the Boston Museum of Fine Arts, so I took courses in there and in painting and drawing and sculpture and so forth.
I got to interrupt you. I'm thinking, Heather. I don't know if you want to react to this, but I'm thinking, who would have the gall to try to stop you?
Even know how to begin.
That's right.
Yeah, right.
I was just following. I was following my heart, my inner guide. I mean, is my
I
love.
A question though. What did you run in those nursing shoes when you crossed the country?
I ran in nurse's shoes. I wore a tank top bathing suit. And then if it was summer, which it was, I wear shorts and a little blouse or something. But they didn't have women's underwear.
Just one pair of socks when you're doing that?
Yeah, either sock. Yeah,
okay.
Either socks or no socks.
Yep, yep.
Sometimes no socks, actually. And so so that was that. Then I came back. I was going to run the next year, but I had two sprained ankles. So I went another year, and during that year, I continued to train. And I ran 65 miles of the Woodstock equestrian horseback competition in Vermont. And that was in the fall of 1965.
You ran 65 miles?
Well, yeah.
So an ultra run, basically.
Well, I ran 40 miles the first day, and then I came back and ran 25. It's a 45. It's 40, 40, and 20. They run, it's 100 mile. And I ran 40 the first day, and I ran 25 the second day, and then my knees were hurting, and I thought, you know, I don't want to injure myself. I didn't take aspirin or Tylenol. People take all kinds of stuff now for energy and for pain. I didn't take any of that. So I think pain is very valuable. I didn't want to hurt my knees. So I thought, well, you know, I better not push. So I thought, well, at least I know I'm ready for the marathon. And then I moved to California in January of 66. I actually married a man that I had known at Tufts. And he was in the Navy. It was the middle of the Vietnam War, and all the war protests were going on. The civil rights stuff was going. Women's movement hadn't started yet. But so then I came back from California. Well, I wrote for my application in about February, and I got a letter back from Will Cloney and said, women are not physiologically able to run 26 miles.
No way.
Yeah.
Is that, seriously?
Yeah, yeah.
And government stupid sometimes.
Well, how did they know? Women didn't even know. No, there were no women doing this. Why would any? Because the longest race, sanctioned race for women, was a mile and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were in sports, you were told if you were a woman, you can't run more than a mile and a half. So you did. So women in sports wouldn't train, and a woman outside of sports would have absolutely no reason to set off and run 40 miles. So it was. I was in a unique position of being outside of the sports world, so I wasn't confined by those false beliefs.
So how did you feel when you, as a scientist, when you received that letter, knowing you'd already run 65 miles?
Right. Well, it was. I thought, well, here is the same. I would say, how did I feel as a woman? I said, here's the same mindless box. You can't do something. This is prejudice. This is stereotype. Because you belong to a certain class of person, whatever it is, an ethnic group, a race, in this case, a gender, you are not allowed to be who you are. You're not allowed to express yourself. You're not allowed to develop your gifts. You're not allowed to participate in certain activities. Mm-hmm. And in this case, running. So I said, okay, they have something to learn. I thought, once it was a men's division race. There were no sanctioned marathons for women because nobody, including women, knew that women could do this. So I said, okay, well, once they see this, they'll open it up to women. And more important, it will throw into question all the other false beliefs that have been used for centuries to keep women confined in this little box. So I said, finally, a chink in the armor. And it was a small one, a small opening, but I thought, wow, if I can do this, it's really going to help to set women free. So I took a bus back.
From California
to Boston. I arrived the day before the race. My parents thought I was nuts. My father went steaming out of the house. He thought I was delusional. He said, no, you're not going to run the race. He was afraid I would kill myself. But I persuaded my mother to drive me to the start. I said, Mom, this is going to change the way people think about women. It's going to help to set women free. And that rang a bell with her. And so she drove me out to Hopkinton and let me off. So that's how I got to the start of the race.
And you were in disguise, basically, right?
I didn't know what to wear because it was a catch-22, a double bind, because how can you prove something that you're not allowed to do? No? And so I didn't know what I was getting into. I was all alone. I had no protection. I thought I might be put in jail. I might be arrested. I didn't know what was... So I had a blue hooded sweatshirt on, my hair tied back, and I had my brother's Bermuda shorts, and I had new boys' running shoes that I got, which was a huge mistake because they gave me horrible blisters. I should have kept with the nurse's shoes. But So then she let me out, and I ran all around Hopkinton trying to figure out how to get in the race. I knew if I got into the pen, they'd see me. My biggest fear was they would stop me.
Yeah.
And so I ran all around, and then I found a clump of bushes as close to the start as I could get. And then I went off behind some buildings, and I warmed up for about 45 minutes because I thought you had to warm. Of course, I just come 3,000 miles on the bus, three nights on the bus. So I thought, well, I better warm up. So 45 minutes, I'm running. I probably, you know, 3 miles.
Yeah,
extra miles. And I ran. And then as the beginning of the race approached, I got back into my hiding place. Then the gun went off. The men left. I jumped into the middle of the pack. And again, I didn't know what would happen. And but the men very quickly realized I was a woman. Studying my anatomy from the rear, I could feel this.
That's what men do.
They do, and I have to give them credit.
Yes, we do.
Within a very few minutes, and I could hear them talk. Is that a girl?
Okay.
is that a girl? And they're studying, you know.
Great.
So I turned around, and I laughed, and I smiled, and they said, it is a girl. So I was amazed.
This makes me cry. I'm going to cry.
Oh, yeah.
And so they said, it is a girl. And so so I laughed and turned around. I wanted to keep it upbeat, and I wasn't trying to run against the men. I wanted to end this stupid war between the sexes and show that men and women can do things together as friends and colleagues. And so they were supportive, and I took off the hooded sweatshirt because it was a hot day. Mm-hmm. That was a hot year, lots of sun. And so then everybody could see I was a woman, and no, it was amazing because the men didn't throw me out. They could have easily shouldered me out of the race. They could have been hostile, but they said, gee, I wish my girlfriend would run. I wish my wife would run.
Yeah.
They wanted to share their running with the women in their lives.
Sure.
It was the women that were keeping themselves in this little box. And so then I was afraid, oh, the crowds. You know, when you do something this far out of the social norm, people can be hostile. But no, the crowds are all cheering, and the men were going, "Atta go, girly," and the women were crying and jumping up and down and screaming. And pretty, of course, the press began to follow my run. And as I was getting into Boston, it was being broadcast on a local radio station where I was. When I got to Wellesley, of course, the women went crazy. They were looking for me, and I know this because the president of Wellesley, the president of Wellesley later. Wrote an article, and she said, we were listening to the radio, we knew she was coming, so we were watching for her, and when she came, we let out a huge scream, and then one woman over the side, she's going, Ave Maria, Ave Maria, and it was, as I thought, oh my God, they really get it, this is really changing. So I ran all the way to Boston.
Did they give you a pick-me-up at that point, too?
Yeah, and I was feeling good. Mm-hmm. I was feeling good all the way. You know, all the way up.
Well, after 60 miles a day.
Yeah, it was. I was holding back. I wasn't even pushing because I was afraid that I wouldn't be able. I didn't want to. No, I didn't know. I'd never run. I didn't know the course. I didn't know how to run. I had no. So I was just holding back because I wanted to save something for the finish. And so I got by about 3 miles away from the finish. The blisters were just killing me. They were raw. They were bleeding. And so my pace dropped up, and I was just kind of tiptoeing along. But I finally got there, and I turned the corner onto Boylston Street and turned down, and there was this roar from the crowd, and the press was there, and the governor of Massachusetts came down, shook my hand, and all the press closed around, and you know, they wanted to interview me, why are you doing this, and so forth. And so then I took a taxi home, and I got to my street, and there were cars all up and down my street, and I thought, oh, gee, somebody's having a party. And they were all at my house. It was the press. And my poor little parents standing there in the middle of the living room, completely confused, phone ringing, and no, congratulations on your daughter and all this. And so, yeah, the next day it was front page headlines. And it wasn't just on the sports page. It was front page headlines. And it went out around the world. It's like, wow, it really was a pivotal event in changing the way people thought about women.
Yeah.
And it really helped to galvanize the women's movement because 2 months later, NOW was founded. And, you know, and so, you know, when you start, when sometimes all it takes is one person or a few people who change their own internal consciousness, And then that goes, and then next people, and then 10, then 20, then 100, and then a million. And pretty soon there's a critical mass, and that's how social movements start. I mean, that's how abolition started. Somebody said, this is wrong. And so it grows until there's a mass movement, and then the legislation can change, and then you get Title IX, and you get... And now we have quite a different world, and it starts small and grows.
I was thinking of the uniqueness of the accomplishment and the way you did that, in that you had a vision of something you wanted to do, but it wasn't done through normal channels. It wasn't done through political channels.
No.
It was done through a popular race, and I find that amazing. And the other thing, I don't know if you ever, have you guys ever heard of a woman named Jackie Cochran? She was a pilot. She was a pilot in World War II and the Korean War and so on. She was very, very popular out in the test ranges. She was a test pilot as well, and she broke barriers too. And I was thinking, boy, this is the Jackie Cochran of the East right now. But again, the uniqueness of the way you did that, Bobby, is to me, it's like it's almost poetic, I guess, in that everything fell into place. You had a vision, you did something else, and then the idea came to run. And again, not through political channels, but through sports.
Yeah. It shows you what you can do when you set a goal and every day you work towards it, and until you accomplish that goal. But you know that I felt about the women's movement is the crucial. The women can get out and scream and burn their bras and jump up and down all they want, but until they can demonstrate that they can actually do something, like run a marathon or be a good lawyer or be a good doctor, they don't have the credibility. So it has to be a sort of a two-pronged thing. They have to break the barrier enough to get in to prove that they can do these things, and then they have to become proficient as a scientist. Now we have a lot of brilliant scientists. When I was in school, it was very difficult for a woman to get into medical school. They told me I was too pretty, I'd upset the boy in the lab, or to get into science or any of those things. So you have to do both. You have to push politically, and you also have to demonstrate. You have to show that you can do these things.
Okay, and then let's fast forward, and I hope that I can talk with you again about what's going on today, about the art in your life and all that stuff. But let's just recap this week's events. How was the experience this time?
Oh, it was wonderful. I mean, again, you've got thousands and thousands of people running, and I would just want to say the next year I came back and ran 1967, and there was another woman running, and she'd gotten an illegal number in the men's division race. They tried to rip it off her. And it created a real negative thing. But then she devoted her life to helping women to become more fit and in organizing races and so forth. So she was there this year celebrating, as were many other, because this was also an anniversary of 1972 when the marathon was finally, there was finally a sanctioned marathon for women. And they could run with legal numbers. Up until that time, all of us women were running in the Pioneer Division. We didn't have numbers until it was a sanctioned race. So that now we have a women's division race and a men's division race. And it was fantastic being there. I mean, 30,000 people, something like that. Almost half of them were women. And then it's the spectators and the press and the BAA, the Boston Athletic Association. How they organize this thing is incredible. And then we have the first responders, the National Guard, the police. These are really heroic people. And I have huge amount of respect for these people. They have to deal with incredibly dangerous situations on the one hand, and they have to turn around and help the little ladies across the street on the other hand. And I know a lot of policemen that I have worked with and run with. These policemen train on their off days so they can run the marathon and raise money to fight cancer, children's cancer. I mean, these are amazing people. And so they were there, and the doctors, the whole thing. I mean, and the people from all over the world, over 90 countries represented there. And so you become friends with people from all over the world, all ethnic groups, all races, all political persuasions, and you're all there hugging each other and exchanging emails and getting to be friends. And I think, wow, if we can do this, we don't have to have these stupid stereotypes and all these fears of each other. And so, you know, if we can come to be friends with each other and love each other, like in this marathon, we can do it in the world. That's my next step. I mean, I want to organize.
Run like, to Washington. Peace, we should all run to Washington,
peace,
right?
Peace marathons. No, we have to embrace people and understand where they're coming from. And
may I ask how many marathons you've run? Or the Boston Marathon. How many times have you run the Boston Marathon?
I ran in one in 66, 67, and 68. And then I came back my 20th and ran it with a pulled hamstring. And then I came back on my 30th. And ran it, and on that occasion it was the 100th anniversary, and they gave me a medal with my first three runs on it engraved on the back, and I forget a couple other times. It sort of blurred. I ran the New York Marathon. That was fun. That was really fun, going through all the boroughs with the music, little kids wanting their hands touched. It was so cute. And the last time I ran Boston was 2001 to raise money for research on neurodegenerative diseases. Then afterwards I met the head of the lab, and then I started working on neurodegenerative diseases because one of my best friends, Buck Robinson, who started Toad Hall Bookstore, came down with ALS, and I love him, and I was running to raise money for the lab that was treating him, and so I went to work for them, and I now work, after practicing law for 18 years, I've now shifted fields over to I work in neurodegenerative diseases for this lab.
Another interview.
I'm speechless, and I want to thank you so much, and I want to set up a date that we can do this again. But thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Bobby. It's been a great pleasure. I love you guys.
Fantastic. Marathon for Peace. All right,
Marathon
Heather. Talk to you in a minute.